Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, chatting with you today from a glorious summer Vancouver morning. Today I have the pleasure of talking with Peter Yates, who is a lecturer in medical education research at Keele University School of Medicine, where I understand summer has also hit. We'll be discussing a paper that he and his co-authors have coming out in the September 2019 issue of Medical Education, entitled How Absolutes Vary, Exploring Differences in Individual and Group Judgments in Standard Setting. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Standard setting is one of those things that is like bread and butter or breathing air for those who are in the assessment world, but for a lot of our listeners who don't do assessment themselves, it might not be an immediately obvious concept. So I think I better start by asking you if you wouldn't mind explaining what standard setting means to you.
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, essentially, with any kind of high-stakes assessment, we need a way of determining which scores of people will pass and which scores won't pass. And there are many methods of doing this, but essentially you can divide them largely into criterion-referenced or norm-referenced CUT scores. So criterion-referenced aim to produce a CUT score on kind of absolute grounds, which are based on the test and its difficulty, rather than on the performance of students on the test. And the idea of that is it's selecting the level of the just passing, the minimally competent, or the just safe student. So there are various methods described in the literature for doing that. They've got names: Ebel, Angoff, Hofsti. And these methods involve judgment processes, usually involving a committee of people. And those involve engaging with the test, looking at it item by item, and using the processes of that method to determine a CUT score as a result. So by the virtue of that kind of committee process, you end up with an overall score for the test, for the exam, which is the CUT score, the score which students need to achieve in order to pass.
Well, and these procedures that you just named have been around for decades, and they're used largely to try to get to a decision as to what that CUT score should be that is comfortable and seems right given the various contextual factors involved. Given that they've been used for so long, I'm curious as to what the issue is that you thought needed to be addressed through further research.
So the issue which arose within the UK is that there's a partnership between 33 of the UK's medical schools called the Medical Schools Council Assessment Alliance, or MSCAA. We don't have, at the moment anyway, a national licensing exam. And so part of the premise of this collaboration is to demonstrate and try to ensure equivalence between the standards required at each of the different medical schools. So part of this project involves sharing 60 knowledge testing items, single best answer, best of five, multiple choice questions between the participating medical schools. Each of those schools standard set those items themselves using their own choice of process. And part of the processes which the Common Content Exercise undertook across a couple of successive years was to compare the passing standards which medical schools set on those items. And what they demonstrated, and this work was published in Medical Education by a different group, Taylor et al. In 2017, showed that there was some variation between the schools in the standards which they set. And the intention is the level required by a just passing, a just safe new graduating doctor. So the MSCAA were, you know, very intrigued by this, and in response to this, they commissioned a number of different pieces of research to try and understand more about this. And we at Keele University School of Medicine responded to that call and ended up taking on this piece of work in response to that. So it's really responding to an observation in the national context about some variations between the standards set on these shared items which prompted this. Looking at the literature, interestingly, despite there being really quite a large domain of work on standard setting, both within medical education and the wider education literature, there's actually been surprisingly little work focused on the judgment processes involved, both at the individual level and the group level. And so it was really in response to that observation and the lack of information in the literature that we arrived at this research question.
I'd be very surprised if that variability you describe were specific to the situation in the UK. This is seemingly inevitably an issue everywhere. I imagine just that most countries haven't taken the time to actually look across how these standard-setting practices are leading to variability in decision across institution. So you actually went and observed these standard-setting meetings, or how did you collect your data?
Yeah, that's right. So again, working with the MSCAA, we purposefully sampled across schools that set either a low, a medium, or a high standard on these shared items. The identity of the schools are anonymous, so they had to do that kind of recruitment stage for us. And then we went and observed a graduation level standard setting meeting in each of the participating schools. And then we performed semi-structured interviews with some of the standard setting judges within each of the schools that took part.
I think you used the word complex earlier, the complex judgment processes. That almost seems redundant given the judgment always seems to boil down to some odd complexities. But what were the factors that really stood out to you as seeming to drive some of the variability that led to this research?
So one of the things that's important about this research is that we investigated the processes which went on that individual judges use, that the groups use, and then which seem to arise from the institutional context. And we've described a whole range of processes. It's actually difficult to know if any of them individually contributes to the resulting variability. But I mean, things which stood out to us, which I think are comparatively novel, firstly, that different judges seem to understand or construct their ideas of a just passing, just safe medical student or new doctor in different ways, referring to different types of concept. So for some, it was based around the idea that maybe they had different patterns of attendance to other students. For some, it was based on limited knowledge. For some, it was more about an issue with knowledge application. For some, it was about around a kind of test savviness and kind of second guessing the assessment as a way to cover a lack of depth of knowledge. Some described students who would be emotive or tending to panic, especially if they were presented with challenging questions with large amounts of data in them. So people constructing the idea of minimal competence in very different ways. One of the things that we kind of reflected on was that you could take that as sort of almost evidence that maybe the judges didn't have a clear idea of what a minimally competent student is. But in fact, we think the opposite. We think that judges are describing different students who are minimally competent for different reasons. And then in fact, they were describing a very legitimate form of difference in these perspectives. So that seemed to illustrate the complexity of the underlying phenomenon which the method addresses. So that was one of the findings which stood out to us as very interesting. And then simply the way the group interacted, they spent a large amount of time constructing representations of the clinical cases in each of the questions, or at least sometimes they did, sharing information, challenging each other in a way which often constructively revised their estimates of questions. But then we also saw other sort of intriguing behaviors, partly some tendency to conformity within groups, this assumption that outliers in the judgment process were likely to be incorrect, and sometimes quite dramatic responses to that. And then different kind of strategies that group members used to influence each other when on other occasions they felt quite determined that a particular position was correct. So there was a lot going on there. Collectively, it produced a picture of complexity.
And by strategies, you mean that people were actually deliberately trying to convince others within this group that the standard should be set where they perceived it as being appropriate. That does suggest considerable group process that makes it sound a lot like any clinical competence committee or any group that's charged with making a decision about the progression of individual students.
Yeah, so I mean, again, I should stress this was a minority of occasions, and we're talking about individual items rather than the overall judgment here. But yeah, there would be occasions when judges would use quite emphatic language to try and convince their colleagues that their position was correct. And we occasionally saw things that we labeled as bargaining, sort of negotiating, well, I'll change my judgment by this much, but not by that much. Or even, and again, this is a process described in the wider literature on standard setting, but what you might call polarization. So usually in a conformity process, judges will move their revised score towards the group average. If a judge actually moves their judgment away from the group average, then they mathematically then have the influence of dragging the average slightly in the direction of their preferred choice. We only saw that happen once, actually, but it evidences, you know, the possibility that these type of behaviours can occur. So there was certainly a complexity of the interactions in terms of the way that groups interacted, and you kind of raised the idea of clinical competence committees, which we don't really have in the UK, actually. We have a different way of working, but there would seem to be many parallels. And certainly the interest which has arisen in clinical competence committees may well parallel what we found here.
Yeah, it's just an interesting parallel, and I'm drawing it in part because I suspect even those who have never heard of these standard-setting processes that you're describing will recognize the sorts of behaviors or activities you're describing just because it fits so well with what people will have experienced in a variety of group decision-making settings. So having seen what you saw in terms of the complexity in this particular context, though, and given that those sorts of complexities are so commonplace, what can a group or an individual do to try to improve upon or feel more comfortable with the outcomes of these sorts of negotiations?
So, I mean, this research in many ways is a starting point, and I think we have to be slightly cautious making recommendations. But we wondered, for example, I think one of the pressures on groups in this setting anyways is to resolve the differences and to come to a common position. That's what the Angoff method in particular, actually Angoff and Ebel in different ways, requires. One of the things we thought was, well, if judges have legitimately different perspectives, because for very good reasons they're thinking about different types of students and that particular type of student's interaction with a particular question, then really you have something which won't as readily resolve. But this is where something like distributed cognition, where different members of a group think about different parts of a complex decision separately, and then rather than trying to reach a completely unified decision, just take into account the various different perspectives which that results in, then you may there have a way of kind of accommodating everybody's perspective at the same time, and then using that to reach a more kind of harmonious overall decision. But I think we need further work to understand how groups work and what factors are most likely to result in constructive, harmonious operation, and which factors, which circumstances may at times potentially produce some degree of challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I trust that some of that work will be forthcoming, given that, as you said, there's such a large organization interested in this issue and a number of people working on it. Just by way of wrapping up, can you give us a sense of what you think the next priority to be?
Well, I think there's a whole range of potential priorities, but I think one of the things which would be really interesting to study actually is how minimally competent students actually really think through questions to get a clearer idea of their cognition. That also has never really been described in the literature, and yet we have these well-established methods which rely on understanding of that process. So there's that as an option, and then there's a whole range of potential procedural modifications which you could try to make, which would also then offer potential routes to alter the procedure, as well as trying to work out which of these processes, if any, do actually result in the varied outcomes which have previously been reported. Because, I mean, we've described processes at this stage, but we need further work to relate that to the outcomes which have previously been described before we can make a more informed choice about exactly which parts of the process you can most usefully target, if any, in order to try and further enhance the equivalence which these processes produce.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. And for the time being, those listeners who want some more of the details of what has been done to this point can find it in a paper entitled How Absolutes Vary, Exploring Differences in Individual and Group Judgments in Standard Setting. That's in the September 2019 issue of Medical Education. Thanks very much, Peter, for taking the time to chat and for these insightful thoughts on how things might continue to evolve with standard setting processes.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you. Thank you.